Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today taking your calls, 410-662-8780. 866-661-9309 is the toll-free. Email for Shy Folk is foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we've had cool calls so far.
Yeah, this is good.
This is your program. This is you. Hit us up for advice, recommendations, straighten us out on something. You know, it's travel tips or offer travel tips. This is the Euro Live Foreman & Wolf program. So
yes,
let's go to Judy in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show.
Thanks.
And first, I had a suggestion for the woman who was lactose intolerant or whatever. If she does not have a soy allergy, she could use tofu. Now, it would not be. She'd have to season it because tofu is tasteless. But if you put it in your blender, okay, it becomes almost like a cream.
Okay, good.
Okay, and I my main question is something that's really, this is just something that I made. When you roast things, okay, in a roasting pan, first of all, is it better if it's square or oval? And second of all, how do you, if it's parts, like let's say it's you're going to roast a chicken different than you would roast the parts, but I've never had a cookbook that told me, like, you know, rotate it. Of course, a turkey recipe you would rotate a certain amount, but I've never gotten a real clear idea of how to,
Alrighty.
Do I go in there like every 30 minutes and make a quarter turn?
Nope. Okay. Nope. I've got your answer right now.
I was going to say, I think we both can give you some pieces of advice.
So when you're roasting something, you want the roasting pan to be close to the size of what you're roasting. You don't want a lot of open space. And it also depends on if you want to add vegetables to the roasting pan at the near the end of the cooking process, maybe mirepoix or potatoes or whatever you'd like to add, then you need a little bit bigger pan so that you have room for that. You never need to turn over or really turn a roast. The big thing with doing a roast is that you start the first 15 minutes at a higher temperature, say 400 or 425, depending on how your oven works, and then turn it down to 350 or 325 degrees, depending on how big the piece of meat is. If you're doing something that's, you know, like a 20-pound turkey, you're probably going to turn it down to 300 or 290 degrees so it has a slow, nice, gentle roast. Pretty much the bigger the piece of meat, the slightly lower temperature you want to bring the oven down to. But yeah, you know, the biggest thing is basting. If you're going to be roasting something, you want to get some of that wonderful fat out of the pan and baste it back over. And you can either use a baster or you can use a pastry brush. Just watch out if the pastry brush is plastic, which I don't suggest. I suggest boar hair, which is, just easier to work with. I think with the plastic pastry brushes, the fat just kind of falls off of the brush. So that's really it. You know, just keep your temperature at a temperature that's going to be good to keep it nice and moist, because you're looking for a moist roast. So thank you for the question.
So we have a couple of emails. Let's see. There's Patrick in Baltimore. Hello, as the Baltimore summer approaches, I was wondering if you have recommendations on storing wine. I'm beginning to collect rather than just to buy to drink immediately. I have not found well-reviewed wine storage appliances for a reasonable cost. I enjoy spring, and I enjoy hearing the travel food stories. And that's, you're very kind to say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's honestly that I have a pretty big cellar in the house, and it's pretty well insulated and has these great big thick walls. And a part of the summertime, I'll run an air conditioner to keep the temperature down. But in the course of the year, it ranges from 52 degrees to probably 64 degrees, very gradually changing because of those thick walls. And it really doesn't need a whole lot of extra. And honestly, it's a very old house, so it's a relatively damp basement. If you look at the humidity reading, it usually is running at the lowest in the wintertime in the high 50s. Most of the time, it's more like 75-80%, and that's pretty ideal conditions. I did buy a small unit just to keep in the kitchen that holds 50 bottles for about $150.
Oh, that's great.
At Lowe's or, you know, one of these type
stores.
It's a refrigerator, and you set the temperature the way that you wish.
Not glass door, just a simple little refrigerator.
It's glass door, and it's kind of cute.
That's nice.
And it was crazy cheap.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and the humidity is a little low in it, but that I thought was I mean, if I had an apartment or I had a small amount of things I was collecting, things like that, once you get to the official wine appliances, I think you're paying for some officialness mm-hmm. With those things. I sort of ended up going the pragmatic route with an awful lot of things. It's probably, if you're going to have a couple of hundred bottles plus to store, you want to go ahead and properly condition the space. It's probably cheaper to condition the space in a basement or somewhere mm-hmm. than it is to buy an appliance to get that done. I've never seen those be a good buy, I would say.
Good question.
Let's take another call. We have Mick in Phoenix.
Hi, Mick.
Hello?
Hi, Mick. How are you?
Fine, thank
you. How are you?
I'm wondering what the exact regulations are about importing meat, especially from Europe. I understand that salami and processed meats cannot be imported. Am I correct about that?
I think that, one, if you want exact regulations, go to the FDA website, and I guarantee you that there are 200 pages of them just on meat alone. And there's also, and different countries have different regulations, different tariffs. Our food relationships with other nations is kind of crazy. There are excellent salamis and whatnot being made right now in the U.S., much more than, say, a decade ago or 20 years ago. There's a particular producer in New Jersey, and we'll have to get the information up and put it up on the Formal Wolf page on the website. I think that maybe not just you will be interested in that. Mm-hmm. There's also a Spanish producer that does the same kind of thing that has excellent product. That is a very easy connection if you're really looking for the authentic imported stuff. But we can put those up on the website this coming week.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, of course.
Thanks, Mick.
Bye.
So we have Laurie in Annapolis.
Hi, Laurie.
Laurie? Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. It's so nice to talk with you. It's my first time hearing the show, but I've been a big fan of your restaurant for a long time.
Well, thank you.
Cool. However, in the last year, for various reasons, I became vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really miss as a vegan is fine dining.
Sure.
So I was wondering if you'd ever consider adding vegan options on any of your menus.
All the chefs, and it's always helpful if you at least, you know, when you make a reservation to let us know in advance, and that can just be, you know, the day before. Even if you don't, we can all make vegan meals for you as you sit down. But, you know, giving us a little advance warning is always helpful too.
Advance warning gives us a chance to make sure that we have a chance to think about some dishes in advance. There may be a few things available on a menu, but if you tell a chef who is really serious about what they're doing, you know, gosh, I have some restrictions, but I really want you to cook for me. I want to have the best of your cooking, mm-hmm. but I have some limitations on what I can have.
Mm-hmm.
No chef is worth their salt is not going to knock themselves out to
sure.
to try to show you a range of things.
Sure.
It may not be on the, that's the kind of thing, it may not be on the printed menu. If you give them warning and you ask in advance, especially, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. Just give us a chance to bring a little bit of extra product in so that we can be a little bit more creative.
I will absolutely do that. I will bring my vegan friends with me.
Okay. that sounds good.
And I second the cashew cream. It's a decent substitute.
Very good. Thank you so much, Laurie. Have a good day.
And thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
So we've got Deirdre and Frederick on the line. Deirdre, go ahead.
Hi. I'm going to be going down to Charleston, specifically St. John's Island, in about a week to relax and kayak and stuff. And we like to go out for a casual lunch. I was wondering if you had some suggestions for St. John's Island.
I have never been to St. John's Island, and quite frankly, even though I lived in Charleston, can you tell me where that is? Because I'm not familiar with St. John's.
I think it's Kiawah Island.
Oh, okay,
there.
Okay, Kiawah. You know, again, it's...
I'm super jealous. That's all I'm going to say about
this. Oh, exactly. Yeah, because that's I would like to go, too. That's going to be a great trip for you.
Room. Call me later.
Kayaking.
I'm sure that Cindy can come up with a whip up a pretty good casual meal for you.
Yeah, right.
On the quick.
How about with an outdoor grill?
Oh, you got it. Oh, man, no problem.
You should be able to.
I love to grill outside.
Ideas.
Okay.
Or picking up things.
Oh, well, you should go to the seafood restaurants. Okay, Kiowa is definitely going to have some little seafood restaurant that you can go and pick up some great fresh fish or shellfish or whatever, and I mean, honestly, and cook it yourself. But it has been years since I've lived in Charleston. I mean, it's not been since the late 80s that I actually lived there. Kiowa has, I know at least they used to have a wonderful hotel there that had a great restaurant. And so, I'm not up to date on that, but I have a feeling you're going to find plenty of little places on the island there that will be fun for you to go to.
All I'm thinking about is some of those sweetwater oysters.
Mm-hmm. I love
opened up on the grill you're talking about outside.
Well, that's very southern. You know, if you happen to have a burlap bag and a little water to throw over them, then you're a real southerner there. If you can manage that, just a little wood fire and oh god, steamed oysters over a wood fire are unbelievable. You've got to do it. All right, well, have a good trip.
All right, thanks so
Deirdre.
Much.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
All right, you want to engage in a little chef's challenge? Actually, I think we have one more email here.
Okay.
Let's see.
Tony's putting his glasses
on. Yeah, I am
on.
Putting my reading glasses
on. This is blow by blow
on.
Here in the radio station.
Subject, Granada, Spain.
Oh, that's a good subject.
Right this very moment, I'm in Granada, Spain.
Oh, wow.
Specifically, in Albaicin, to so many stairs. So, what's the one cava I must have while I'm there? What's the one restaurant I will spend the rest of my life regretting if I don't eat there? Christopher from Baltimore. Cava producers... Honestly, probably one of the more ubiquitous, really high-quality cava producers that you'll find in Spain is Raventos. Mm. Pepe's been on the program. He's an excellent winemaker. It's not cava. What you want to look for is Conca. Conca is this group of small producers, mostly in Spain, making sparkling wine, largely from indigenous grapes, trying to actually be connected to their terroir, not trying to copy something from somewhere else. And the most detail-oriented growers that are there. And I've been very impressed with Recarero is another one that makes excellent product. But look for the Conca designation. And Raventos, especially his rosé, is terrific.
Yeah, his wines are... And he's an amazing man and an amazing family and lots of history. Great place.
All right.
People.
Chef, you ready to be challenged?
Yeah, let's do it. Give it to me. Quick. We don't have much time.
All right. There we go.
Oh, God. All right. Two veal necks. Okay, these are the things that Tony is challenging me to cook. Two veal necks. Well, I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
One rouge pumpkin, pine nuts, fresh sage. One always is challenged with Tony's handwriting. Few fingerling potatoes, shallots, garlic, veal bones, mirepoix. I don't know what this says. Butter, extra virgin olive oil, and cream. What's that?
It's a bottle of Norella Mascalese.
Oh, of course.
Something's got to get you through the process
the world
of cooking
that is?
A veal neck. It's a medium-bodied red wine from the hills of Mount Etna.
All right. Well, I've already decided, as you just said, I'll be drinking some of that since I'm cooking it at home. That's okay. The veal necks obviously need to be roasted. I'm going to roast them. I should probably braise them, but I'm going to roast them. I'll just sear them. I'll sear them well in the pan. That'll get good color.
They're pretty awesome to braise.
Yeah, good color. So I will braise them. And... oh, boy. So I'm braising. I've got shallots and garlic in the pan with a mirepoix. I'm going to add a little bit of the wine. And what I like is that you gave me cream because I love a little, Blanquette de Veau is made with a sauce made with cream.
Cashew.
Well, I can. but you didn't put it on here, so I cannot.
No, I didn't.
It's not one of my ingredients.
Next time.
Time you're going to give me cashew cream, and I will take care of that. So
after
once it's braised,
it for 6 hours.
One thing about veal necks is that there's really not a ton of meat, so I like the idea.
That's why I gave you two.
Yeah, and that's, and the rouge pumpkin, I'm definitely roasting in my other oven at a very low temperature. I've cut it open. I've removed the seeds. It's meat side down on a sheet pan with a little bit of water so it steams as it roasts, and I'm going to pull that meat out. And what I like about it is that you've given me the pumpkin, the pine nuts, and the sage. The fingerling potatoes will go in with the veal neck as they're braising. I'm going to peel them. I don't want the skin coming off, so we'll peel those. And this is going to make a great sauce. So once the veal neck
you
comes
out. You
can
fry those skins and snack on them while you're
drinking
the
Della Mascalese. You could, but yeah. I couldn't or wouldn't. So there you go on that one, Tony. So I'm going to braise it. There's the meat. I've got this gorgeous sauce that's reduced down. I'm finishing it with just a little bit of cream. I'm going to serve this with the pumpkin that I've added just a little bit of fresh sage on top, roasted pine nuts. And there, that's it. There you go. Yum. It sounds like fall, though. That's kind of fall-like to me.
It is. It is a little bit fall-like.
Okay. I just... All right. Here's your turn.
Okay.
There you go. See, mine's typed.
Yours is typed, everyone. Yours is typed. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Thinking ahead.
Okay.
All right.
So eggs, thyme, rosemary, two types of extra virgin olive oil, lemons from Italy. I know you're speaking about those lemons from Campania that are huge.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
The last of the winter truffles, quarter pound, white wine, red wine, heavy cream, butter. What are we cooking? It sounds like the greatest omelet ever. Fresh old artichokes, shallots, onions, garlic, morel mushrooms, celeriac, saddle of American lamb, 5 pounds of whole red snapper, 12 scallops in the shell. We have Diamond Jim Brady coming over for supper? I can't do this in like a minute and a half. Oh, my God.
Come on.
All right. Well, the winter truffles I would slice and stud under the skin of the big whole red snapper. The center of the snapper, I would stuff with the shallots and the artichokes after poaching them, and a little bit of garlic. I would grill that on a wood grill, get the skin mm-hmm. all crispy.
Sounds good.
With the truffles underneath there. Oh, my goodness. The lamb, saddle of lamb, I'm saving for tomorrow.
All right. You're going to have to finish this another time, I think.
Morel mushrooms. I was going to make a salad with the morel mushrooms and a vinaigrette or a cream with the juice and the peel from the lemons.
Mm-hmm.
And almost like a whipped cream with a lemon with the morels and the celery root.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh my gosh, giant
menu. Well, I gave you a lot of good things to work with.
You did. I wish this was it.
Yeah.
I may have to go to the store after this.
We had a lot of good callers. Thank you so much for calling in, everyone. Really appreciate it.
And thanks so much for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.